This is The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Why hunt? This is a question the Aldo Leopold Foundation asks and answers in their new guide to hunting. It's not just about pursuing animals. In fact, for some hunters, that's the secondary issue. It's about being out in nature. It's about sharing knowledge with your friends and family. It's about being close to the land. In this day of increased urbanization, many newcomers are heading to the woods and finding the benefits of hunting. Today, we're joined in studio by two people from the Leopold Foundation. Buddy Huffaker is the executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation, who also holds the title of Project Champion of Why Hunt. Buddy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Eel is a former Aldo Leopold Foundation fellow who is currently getting her MS in environmental science from the Nelson Institute. She's also the R3 and shooting sports program specialist for the DNR. Emily, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So listeners out there, are you hunters? Have you ever hunted? Why do you hunt? Why don't you hunt? Did you hunt before as a kid? Have you stopped? Was this a family thing? And how did you develop your skills as a hunter? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is our email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So let's start with you, Buddy. Let's dive into the nitty-gritty of this question. Why hunt, and why would you put out this really actually quite beautiful booklet on why people should hunt?
Well, with the Aldo Leopold Foundation, we take a lot of our inspiration from Mr. Leopold himself. Those that aren't familiar with him, he was a prominent conservationist in the 30s and 40s, professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and is credited with developing the whole field of wildlife ecology and wildlife management. He wrote a book called A Sand County Almanac that is now a classic. And in it, he talks a lot about his connection and experiences with the land, many of which grow out of his participation in hunting and how experiential that was, how observant that made him about how wildlife moves and acts, how natural habitats work. And so we recognize that there is this kind of increased interest and attention in the environment, and wanted to make sure people understood the kind of economic, the ecological, and the social benefits and values associated with hunting. And so as we see some declines in hunting participation, we wanted to remind people how important that activity can be in building connections between people and the land.
Emily, I'm assuming you hunt. Did you grow up hunting?
No, I didn't actually. So I have a kind of a personal story that goes along with
this. Go for it.
And so I've always been interested in the outdoors and conservation. And we spent a lot of time in the national parks when I was a kid. And I ended up studying conservation biology here at UW-Madison as an undergraduate. And the more I kind of learned about hunting, the more in my classes especially I learned how it could be used as a tool for you know, land management and restoration projects, and just how involved people could be on the landscape while they were hunting. And so I kind of took that in and kept it in the back of my mind. And I actually met a hunter who is now my husband.
Ah, well.
Yep, that has a big impact.
Yes.
But he was able to show me just kind of the way that he hunts and the values that he holds in it. And so I went along with him a number of times, and just the things that I experienced were amazing, for lack of a better word. And
like what?
What
surprised you about the first time you went hunting?
I don't know if it was particularly the first time. So the first time I actually went through a Learn to Hunt program, which is a DNR program. And so that really introduced me to handling firearms, which I was completely afraid of. But I think it was, to me, hunting is kind of like doing garlic mustard, or, you know, spraying garlic mustard on Leopold Memorial Reserve. It's this, you know, you go out there day after day after day, and it's not any specific time that gives you that sense of just beauty in the world, but it's the whole experience. But I can think of at least one instance where I saw things that I was just, I thought that you didn't see those things unless they were in dreams. So one of the instances I'm thinking of is my husband and I were, I had gone out to sit with him on the lower Wisconsin Riverway. And so we had paddled out in our canoe and just kind of sat in the woods and watched the sun go down. And it was just very quiet. And we didn't really see anything other than squirrels. And I think we might have saw a possum walk through the woods, which is always fun. But on the way home, it was getting dark. And so we climbed out of our trees. And it was getting chilly at that time. And the stars were coming out. And so we got in the canoe and loaded all our stuff and just started floating down the river. And we didn't really have to paddle because we were going downstream. So I was sitting in the front of the canoe and I just leaned back and wrapped my coat around me and was looking up at the stars, just listening to the water slide by the canoe. And then all of a sudden I hear this huge boom in front of me, just like this huge slap on the water. And it scared me out of my wits because I had no idea what would be out there in the middle of the night. And it turned out that it was a beaver slapping its tail on the water right in front of our canoe. And, you know, for me growing up, I've heard about the fur trade. I've heard about how beavers were trapped out of, you know, the waterways of the United States. And it just didn't really occur to me that beavers were out there on the landscape.
And would interact with you.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
You were trying to get home.
So it was just a very beautiful experience.
That's really cool. We are talking about hunting today. Why Hunt is a booklet that has been put out by the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tell us why you hunt or perhaps why you don't hunt or don't hunt anymore. Some people think that hunting is just killing animals. The story you told tells me that hunting is more of an experience than just killing animals. So talk to me about that, buddy.
Yeah. people often say if fishing was easy, they would call it catching. So hunting is not just about killing animals. It is really about the pursuit of wild game, I think. And now in a contemporary context, it has all sorts of regulations and rules to make sure it's done ethically and scientifically. But at the basis, it is about pursuing wildlife for human sustenance. And so, as Emily's story conveyed, that's not easy to do. You mm-hmm. often go out, and more times than not, you're unsuccessful. But it is about reading the landscape, positioning yourself to have a chance and give the wildlife sporting chances. And so it very much is about experience, not just about killing.
You said scientifically. Talk to me about why and how hunting is scientifically important.
So, if we quickly trace the origins of hunting, again, the first peoples used it as a way to survive. Mm-hmm. Then it transformed into kind of market hunting. And that's a lot of the negative stigma that we get, where wildlife was just decimated, either for consumption at a scale that it couldn't support, or just for fur, not for really full use. But now, with a lot of legislation that was passed in the early 1900s, it is very regulated. There are seasons for each game species. It's based on the populations and their ability to withstand or need deer and white-tailed deer, in the case of Wisconsin, need for management to keep the population healthy. So it is very regulated and informed by the scientific community to make sure that hunting can support or can manage the species that need management.
We are talking about hunting. We are answering the question that the Aldo Leopold Foundation has put out, asking why hunt. We want to know why you hunt. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Did you perhaps grow up hunting and you didn't do it anymore when you moved to the city? Do you miss it? Would you like to be out in nature again and perhaps have a beaver slap at the water right in front of your canoe? And can you do that without a weapon in your hand? That is another question that we will be getting to. We're going to talk about Wisconsin and the opportunities to hunt in Wisconsin that are different from the rest of the country. Just in two words, buddy, why are you here? Why did you get to Wisconsin?
I came for my first job with the out of graduate school
there
with the
go.
Leopold Foundation. And much like Emily, I was very interested in the environment and conservation, had a career opportunity. And it was in my first couple years with the Leopold Foundation that I first hunted as an adult.
We will get back to that question in a moment. We are talking about why hunt. Here on The Morning Show, it's Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're exploring the art and life of hunting in the U.S. with two people from the Aldo Leopold Foundation, which published a guide linking hunting to conservation. We're here with Emily Eel and Buddy Huffaker. If you are a hunter, or if you used to be a hunter, or if you have thoughts about hunting, give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Tell us your cherished hunting memories. What's the story you keep telling all of your friends? I'm going to go into the conversation we had during the break here. The story of Buddy asked me if I had ever hunted, and I told him that my experience, I'd never shot anything. My one experience of hunting as an adult was being cold and wet. And your response was that that's sometimes a good thing, Buddy.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've really appreciated about hunting as an adult is it puts me in situations that I wouldn't otherwise put myself in. So I hike, I canoe, we spend lots of times outdoors, and yet usually I pick nice weather, you know, to be out and to bike ride or to hike. When it's raining, I stay inside. So hunting has pushed me to put myself in situations that I probably wouldn't otherwise. So other people who are more diligent or you know, motivated might not have that problem. But hunting for me has done that. And so
partly because you're chasing something. So you have to go where they go.
And you have to go when they're out. So often it's early in the morning or at dusk. You know, Emily's story that she shared earlier about being out at night. Well, a lot of us don't canoe at night, but when you're out hunting in that sundown period, then you still have to make it home. And so the wildlife are still out when it's raining or when it's snowing. They're often up and moving at most early in the day. And so then they go hide and rest during the day when we're out stomping around. So I think that's some of the best part of hunting is the memories. And often it's around the discomfort, how miserable it was. You know, my kids still tell stories about how we had to break through ice to get out to an island to set up.
Oh, man.
We didn't even see a duck, let alone shoot a duck. And then we had to break through the ice to come back. You know, but that my daughter Ashley just posted for Father's Day a picture of that hunt, all of us in camo standing in the ice. And so, you know, what an indelible memory for her. She didn't carry a gun. We didn't even bring home a bird. But those are the way memories are made often is by those things that you just can't forget. I can't tell you how many hiking trips I've been on and nothing spectacular happened.
Right. I hear you there. We were talking about hunting, 1-800-642-1234. Emily, let's talk about the impact of social trends that affect hunting. There are agricultural practices that provide less land to hunt on. What are the others?
Sure. So, yeah, agriculture practices kind of have evolved over the last few decades. And so a lot of the larger farm corporations have just replace some of the small family farms in local communities. So I think that there's just, in that sense, less access or availability for people to go ask permission, meet their neighbors, and just be able to be on the landscape in that way. In addition, just this huge trend of urbanization, and I believe the statistic is that by the year 2050, about 50% of the U.S. population will be non-white. So that's a huge change. And then, or oh, oh I'm sorry about that. 50%. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we'll be non-white. And go ahead.
But anyway, urbanization. So more people are moving into cities than ever before. So just moving out of rural communities where hunting is more prevalent.
You talked about population shifts. Buddy, is it just white people who hunt? Have you been able to attract people of color to hunt?
Well, I think, unfortunately, at this point, yes. It's still predominantly the white populace that hunts. That's a challenge for conservation generally, is to engage people of more diversity. Hunting has, I think, additional challenges. There are efforts underway in the state, and I think if you look in our guide, we profile people with different backgrounds, whether they're from urban environments or from multicultural families that did find hunting and have found values in it. So it's think something that the hunting community needs to be cognizant of in continuing to be focused on recruiting diversity and being welcoming and creating opportunities. That is going to be a ongoing challenge.
Emily, you do research in women in hunting. That's actually been going up, hasn't it?
Yeah. So women are actually the only demographic of hunters that is on the rise.
Still white women, but
yep.
Women.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So it kind of goes back to this trend where the number of hunters in the United States reached this peak kind of around the early 80s. And since then, it's been just declining at a steady rate ever since. And that has a lot of implications. But I think... So based on my own story, being a woman learning to hunt as an adult, I was just really interested in, well, how do other women start in this? And the percentage of women hunters is about 11% of the entire hunter population. So it's not very big. But it's not going up, enough to make up for the loss in the number of male hunters. But I think it's still interesting that the research has shown that the number of women who hunt is really strongly tied to the number of men. So if the number of men who hunt goes up in a given year, the number of women is also going to increase.
People are more likely to hunt as a couple now rather than the man saying, bye, honey, I'm going for a weekend with my friends.
I'm hoping that's changing. Yeah, I think that, among my peers especially, that it's much more of a couple thing. Like, I think that from the stories I've heard, I've heard people saying how girls were not asked to go hunting by their fathers when they were kids.
Right.
I think that hopefully that's changing. So a lot of the women that I've talked to as well, they've been kind of in hunting families their entire life, or they might have been interested in shooting sports, but they just never bought the license until they were an adult. Mm. So I think that's an interesting change too, but... From what I've heard, I think that the women who do hunt, they like it and they have their motivations in conservation, and they hopefully...
Conservation, we're going to get that to that in a moment. We are talking about hunting. Why hunt? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Mike in Appleton, thank you for joining our show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, I want to welcome Carrie to the state. I'm the nutcase that walks around Appleton every day for 3 hours from 6 to 9 listening to NPR.
You're the one.
I'm the one. And anyway, I want to welcome your guests also. I have such respect for the Alto Leopold Foundation and him as a man and his philosophy. The thing I wanted to share, I'm in my 60s. And I hunted probably till 5 years ago, did a lot of fishing hunting, and I grew up in central Wisconsin here. But my quote, I love Henry David Thoreau's Walden, and one of his, and I don't have the book with me, but it basically was, hunting and fishing are wonderful to introduce the young man and woman to nature. But, and this isn't a moral equivalency on my part, but he said, anyone with a conscience, you know, soon give up the rod and the bow or the, you know, the gun and just pursues nature and enjoys it, which kind of is what I've done. And that isn't to say that some people don't hunt all their lives. And I, you know, I think it's wonderful, but it just gets you out to experience like the beaver slapping its tail on the water, which I've had happen any number of times fishing on the Wolf River for walleyes in the spring, seeing a mink flank along the bank looking for crayfish. So just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. So hunting for conservation, that's part of what he was talking about. That's what the Aldo Leopold Foundation is about. Talk to me. I think there are other maybe people listening who think, wait a second, we're talking about killing animals to conserve them and to conserve the environment. How does that work?
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. First, Aldo Leopold himself kind of went through a personal evolution in his hunting. So he's very avid and very much about harvesting early in his life. By the end of his career, he still did hunt, but had a little bit more similar approach to what Mike communicated. It was really more about being out there and observing with the occasional harvest. But the conservation implications as they relate to hunting are really important. Again, we've touched on this a little bit, but there are real ecological implications for the decline in hunting. And so, again, in Wisconsin, the easiest example is white-tailed deer. You ask almost any wildlife biologist, we have too many deer out there, both for human health, so deer car collisions and other kind of human health issues are caused by overpopulation of deer. Mm. Lyme's disease is like one example, but also for the deer themselves. They are overcrowded. They are prone to poor health. The chronic wasting disease, which we have now in Wisconsin, is more easily spread, which is deadly to deer. So there, and then that doesn't even address the impacts that too many deer have on the landscape in terms of eating the wildflowers, stopping tree regeneration, and a whole host of other ecological consequences. So hunting at this point really is the only vehicle we have to manage the white-tailed deer population, short of they continue to go crazy and then they have a massive implosion. Mm-hmm. And that is not going to be fun or pretty or healthy for anybody. And then the other kind of conservation implication is just financial. And so the one thing about hunting is you buy a license. You often buy a gun or some kind of weapon.
Bow and arrow, yeah.
All of those things, the license are obvious. You pay for it. That money goes into a fund. And then the state or the federal government uses those to buy more hunting land, to improve the wildlife habitat, to restore non-game populations. So birds, you know, songbirds and other things can benefit from that. The sale of guns and other hunting equipment have an excise tax on them. And so that money also gets redistributed back to state government agencies and conservation organizations that, again, can buy and protect more land that have both hunting values as well as just ecological and conservation values. So the estimated kind of economic impact of hunting is about $26 billion a year, which makes it a bigger activity than, like as a corporation, if you could add it all up, than McDonald's. So it's a serious financial engine. And, you know, some people don't like, well, to your point, well, so we're buying all this stuff and spending money to kill animals to have conservation value. Well, I get that. I actually have my own reservations about it. And yet, it is the single biggest economic driver for conservation in terms of land protection, wildlife management, and that, again, benefit whether you want to hike in the woods or whether you want to hunt in the woods. So the implications are if you just hike or you just bike, there's not the same kind of economic return back to the land that is supporting your activity in the way hunting does. So
interesting.
That's what we're looking at.
You mentioned chronic wasting disease. We've done a couple of stories on this. There have been suggestions that hunters should be kind of unleashed to kill deer with chronic wasting disease. get rid of that disease in the population. Talk to me about that.
Well, that's not my area of expertise, and that obviously is controversial for several reasons. And yet, I think it's clear that if we do not intervene in some way, chronic wasting disease will continue to expand to the detriment of both people and deer. And so I think there are a lot of kind of new innovative proposals now about, when you say unleashing hunters, it would be to compensate them to try to increase the deer harvest, particularly in areas with higher density of CWD. I think those kind of ideas really warrant consideration, maybe even exploration as a pilot to begin with. But again, Emily, you may know, I think it was 600,000 deer were harvested last year, and the population is still increasing at a pretty quick rate. And so without hunting, you have to start to kind of model out what happens. And it again, I think there'd be some pretty serious consequences.
So about a year or two ago, Reveal did Reveal is a public radio investigative reporting show. And they did a thing on trapping in the Sierra Nevada mountains. And hunters would leave traps. People would leave traps out there and then sometimes not get back to them for days or weeks. And the animals would suffer in the traps. What is your view on trapping? You want to take that, Emily?
Sure. Yeah. So I think trapping, similar to hunting to me, sounded very scary when I first started learning about it. But I also, in addition to hunter safety, went through a trapper education program. And it's a lot different than I think the public image shows. So there's lots of laws and regulations similar to hunting.
And these guys were breaking the law. Let's
yes,
be clear. That
exactly.
was the whole point of the Reveal thing.
So you are not allowed to. So the only traps that you are allowed to not check every day are traps that are under ice. So the traps. The water's so cold that the animal's kind of retained. And so, obviously, if the animal's underwater, it's going to be dead already.
Mm-hmm.
And however, if you set any kind of other traps that would hold the animal live, you need to check that every single day. And there are specific hours that are recommended, such as early in the morning or just within 24 hours. So I think that that's very important to let people know. And I think a lot of trapping efforts, you need to remember that, some of the ways that people have restored river otters and wolves are through trapping methods. So I think it's an important activity to remain conscious of and to remain, to have expertise in for those reasons.
So you
as
mean
well.
they have restored river otters by trapping them and then releasing them back?
Correct. So and they actually use foothold traps, and foothold traps to me have been one of the traps of just negative connotation,
right.
But they're designed to not injure the animal's foot, so I think it's a viable way to do that.
Interesting. We are talking about hunting. The Aldo Leopold Foundation has published a book asking why hunt, and I think they've pretty much answered that question too. We're also taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Tell us about your memories of hunting. Tell us why you hunt, and we'll be back in a moment to take those calls and explore hunting more in Wisconsin. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're exploring the sport of hunting and why it is seeing a bit of a resurgence. Buddy Huffaker is project champion of the Aldo Leopold Foundation's Why Hunt Guide. And Emily Eel is a former Aldo Leopold Foundation fellow who is currently getting her master's in science and environmental science from Nelson Institute and works right now for the DNR setting up programs for hunters. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Now, Buddy, just a little while ago, we were talking about people's issues with hunting. I was talking about trapping and Reveal's investigation of unethical trappers. That's an issue in the hunting community, yes?
Yeah, I think it's an issue that the hunting community maybe hasn't been as thoughtful about. I think you hear a lot about unethical hunters or trappers, and rightfully so. A lot of their activities are actually outright illegal. And many are what most other hunters would call unethical. And so there, again, as we've talked about, there are a lot of rules and regulations that define what is legal, what you can hunt, when you can hunt it, how you can hunt it. But there's also, it's called fair chase, and that's a kind of ethical framework that a lot of hunters use that make sure that you are ensuring that you have a clean, safe kill, that you are treating the animals with respect, and that you are bestowing as much kind of consideration on what you're hunting as possible. And so I think, again, a lot of people who might be interested in hunting see the negative stories and get scared off. And I think that's understandable. And what the hunting community needs to do is better job of kind of communicating the positive values and the ways you address and mitigate those concerns. And, you know, as with almost anything, the bad apples often kind of taint the barrel. And so that maybe has been a bigger challenge for the hunting community than in other sectors.
We are talking about hunting and asking and answering the question, why hunt? Jim from Portage, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. So why do you hunt? Do you hunt?
I'm a hunter. I've been hunting in Wisconsin now for almost 50 years and still enjoy it. I drive a lot of miles in the back roads of Wisconsin because I carry Amish people wherever they want to go.
That's cool.
And in the process of all of my driving, I'm up to an average of about hitting about 3 deer a year with my vehicle. So besides the fact that I enjoy hunting, I'm now into revenge. my insurance company has doubled my insurance rate, and it's costing me a fortune to pay the insurance, and it's just the added motivation now of trying to get even, because once you hit them, I know they're yours, but there isn't much left to eat.
Right, that's true. My kids are studying for their driver's license, and they asked me that question, that, you know, you can keep them if you hit them, but Mom, how much is there left? You know, why would you want to hit something, eat something that you hit with a car? Thank you very much for that, Jim. So we need to thin the deer populations so that they are not a hazard to the roads.
Yeah, and that kind of reminds me of just like a sentiment that I have every time that I drive down into Madison from where I live, and every time I see an animal on the road, whether it's a deer or a raccoon or a woodchuck or a possum, it just kind of makes me a little sad. And so I think that hunting and trapping to a large extent are just ways to me that, you know, if you're seeing animals dying on the road, usually those are times of the year when they're dispersing. They might be going to breed in the case of deer, or they might be dispersing away from their home range to go strike out on their own. But I think that hunting and trapping offers a way that those animals maybe can be used besides just being hit by cars and left there. So I think when people hunt deer, they can use the meat, they can use the hide as a decoration, and I think it's just a more personal way to interact with the animals, because you get up close and personal, you can touch it. It's a much more humane way to die, in my opinion. And so
and I'm not going to go into this, but it's also you're exposed to death, and the cycle of life, which I think is interesting. But let's take Paula from Clintonville. Paula, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. My comment is, I'm not a hunter myself, but I come from a family of hunters. I have no problem with hunting. I do see the conservation aspect of it, but I feel like hunters are sometimes they kind of give a mixed message, because they talk about conservation and getting rid of overpopulation as far as spread of CWD and, you know, hitting them on the highway, and yet I feel like they want a certain amount of deer that almost amounts to overpopulation, because the large majority of them, I think, still define a successful hunt as getting a deer. So it seems like every year after the big deer hunting season is over, you hear a lot of people saying, oh, there aren't enough deer out there. There's not enough deer. We couldn't get any deer up north. On. So it's like they want to say, yeah, we're helping with this problem by getting rid of deer, but they don't want to get rid of too many deer
because
there are deer for them to get. And so...
Okay, that. Thank you. Thank you, Paula. That's actually a really, really good point. It's not that I'm a bad shot. It's not that I'm a bad hunter. It's that there aren't enough deer out there, when in fact there are plenty of deer out there. And so there's that sort of friction.
Yeah, I think Paula is correct, and we need more people like her keeping the hunting community honest. So you can't have it both ways.
You're right. You can't have it both ways. So we had Danny called, but he couldn't stay with us, and I'm really sorry about that, Danny. He said that land for hunting isn't always available, and current land is overcrowded. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, some of the trends that I mentioned before, such as differences in agricultural practices, and I think that in general, people, there's been a little bit of a culture change of people not being, you know, interested in letting other people onto their private property as much as they used to. And then, interestingly enough, to kind of to speak to Paula as well, I think people are they love their deer. And so deer hunting is kind of a little bit different than other types of hunting, like turkey hunting or small game hunting in that respect. So, but I think that, I mean, the public lands, I'm thinking of a few studies that kind of measure hunter effort, or, you know, the amount of effort that they put into going and hunting as well. So they'll put in effort to an extent, and then it kind of drops off. And I think, you know, most of the land that I've hunted has been on public lands. And I think during the hunt, you know, the opening weekends especially, it can definitely get crowded. However, I think there's still other options. So, for example, if you can find a piece of public land that's just a little bit harder to access, so the riverway, for example, you either need a boat or a canoe or something like that, and you have to get up the extra hour and make sure that all your gear is in order, and you have to deal with having wet hands and feet and figure those things out. But I mean, when we get in the canoe and go on the river, it's a pretty private experience. And I also think that it's worth knowing how to meet other hunters in the field and know how to share the public lands as well. And that's what they're there for, is to share.
I want to talk about youth hunting. Recently, Wisconsin got rid of its age restrictions. I think it used to be like 14. And now you can take your son or daughter, no matter what age, if you feel that they are ready to hunt. What are we doing to train kids to know how to be able to handle a gun or a bow and arrow and be in the wilderness?
Yeah, some of those are. There's been some pretty disappointing stories that have come out about that. I think, again, it was designed. The intention was to try to eliminate barriers and create more opportunities for youth to hunt. And Emily would know more about the details of this, with a mentor. So the assumption is that, you know, they're with somebody who can help them be safe and hunt safely. But there, otherwise, to hunt on your own, there is still a whole hunter safety requirement before you can purchase your own license and hunt individually.
Emily, you want to take that up?
Sure. So to hunt on your own, you have to be age 12, but there's research that shows that the people who take up hunting at younger ages, they just turn out to be more avid and more involved in hunting as they age and throughout their life. So the later you start hunting, the harder it is for you to keep going. Mm. And I think that that makes a lot of sense, just because hunting is, there's so much to learn, whether it's feeling comfortable handling firearms, learning the regulations, that has taken me forever. And there's just so much. So if you start when you're a child, you are mentored basically generally by your family for almost a decade more than if you were to start hunting as an adult. And I think that really makes a difference.
Do you do youth programs? Do you teach?
Yep. So the Learn to Hunt program run by the DNR, that one is geared mainly toward youth. And then, however, we've been working on a new program in the last few years. And one of the big ideas that has emerged in trying to understand and deal with this problem of declining hunter numbers is actually to focus less on youth and more on adults who are non-hunters, and just kind of explain the benefits to them. And the reasons that adults in particular are interesting is because they have a means to travel. They have their own money to spend. They get to spend, you know, they get to make up their mind on how they spend their time. And so if you're trying to recruit a child from a non-hunting family, you're basically doing double the work, because you need to recruit the parent into those activities. They need to, you know, get on board with why their child wants to hunt and why you think it's important. So the focus is really on adults lately.
In 30 seconds, buddy, where do you see the future of hunting? You're obviously marketing this hard. Where is this going?
Well, first, we have a couple opportunities at the Leopold Center this fall for adults to get put their toe in the water. So I'd encourage folks to check that out. But I think this is going to be an ongoing conversation. We have to understand how we support conservation hunting, and the revenues generated from it are one. There are other opportunities that we could consider. But, you know, to protect land, to improve it for wildlife purposes, those take engagement, finances, and hard work. And we want to make sure all that continues into the future.
We've been talking about hunting this morning. Buddy Huffaker, who you just heard, is the executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Buddy, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Emily Eel is a former Aldo Leopold Foundation fellow who is currently getting her master's in science, in environmental science, and works for the DNR, setting up programs for people to learn to hunt. Emily, thank you for coming in.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow at this time, we're going to look at the state of sex ed in Wisconsin. It's The Morning Show.